Bonjour tout le monde. Before we get started, StreamYard, I think, hung a little bit when I tried to go live on YouTube. And so the first few minutes of the recording are missing. Lucky for you, that only means that you're missing a bit of the SB background on the Woke Handle podcast beginnings, and also you're missing the Shake Pay read. So I'll give you the Shake Pay read now, and you can sort of put the pieces together about where SB found Bitcoin and got the podcast started at the beginning of the show. Hope that doesn't affect the experience for you too much. So, show sponsor, Shake Pay, best place for Canadians to buy and sell Bitcoin. You should never sell, though. They have the Shake Paid promotion where if you buy something with your CAD balance with the Sats Back card, you can be reimbursed for the full amount in Satoshis, which is dope. Of course, they have that Sats Back card as well for you to spend your CAD balance out of, which is a newish feature. I think you get 2% back on everything you buy up to 5K a month or so. And then also, if you sign up with our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, you get the opportunity to shake sats. So the shaking sats hashtag on Twitter is full of people who are doing exactly this. You just shake your phone every day in the app, and you can have up to 1,000 Satoshi sent to you by ShakePay, free of charge, after 200 straight days shaking. But you do get something on day one. You get something on day 58. You get something on day 108, all the way to 200, where it maxes out at 1,000 for the moment. So yeah, great sponsor. We're grateful to them. And we hope you'll check them out. Of course, enjoy the show and enjoy the weekend as well. The Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
And yeah, so far it's been a lot of fun.
I love that story. I think that, for a lot of people, so you described, you mentioned something there that has kind of piqued my interest. I know you guys went to school together from listening to the show. You got to tell me, how's that group chat with you and TB when you guys talk about this sort of stuff? Because I think about my own friend group and, I hold some unpopular opinions. Len and I talk about them from time to time on this show. They're not all finance related. Some are, social issues and other sort of hot button type stuff. How do you breach those topics with friends of yours? I mean, for you guys to have a group chat with people you went to school with, that's great. But are you worried about risking that kind of long-term friendship in favor of, an opinion that's not widely held? Or are you guys all on the same page there? How's that look?
We're all on the same page, but the thought of risking the friendship, that's crossed my mind in other areas too. Not that particular group, but in general. And yeah, I mean, me from the spaces, I'm a pretty outspoken guy. So yeah, I've had my issues with the people that I've grown up with and been friends with in my life because it's they can't really see from our perspective, but we can see from their perspective. So it's sort of like we understand that this world's gone to this crazy place, and yet we kind of it's understandable that people may have been misled by whether it's the media, whether it's politicians. There's a lot of misleading going on in this day and age. So I'm not going to be extremely frustrated with someone who disagrees with me, particularly if I think they've been, misled over a number of years. I think what I found is I don't get the same courtesy from the other side, where if I have an opinion they disagree with, then pretty much that could be the end of it if it's the wrong opinion. So yeah, with those guys, it's we're all on the same page, which is fun. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely people I don't talk to as much anymore as I used to, which is sad because that's not how it should be.
You're right. I think you're probably not alone there, SB. We'll get back to the podcast. You've on the show talked about your professional life in finance of some kind. You've mentioned a number of times that you work in the industry and are dealing with sort of TradFi people. As that relates to opinions that are unpopular, let's talk about Bitcoin. You're obviously a big Bitcoin guy. You guys, have. You're the only show in the world that talks about Will Smith's slap and the implications for broader society. and then also discuss the price action and adoption curve of Bitcoin in the same hour. So, you know, what is it like for you professionally when you discuss Bitcoin with people who, you know, I assume are sort of hell-bent, maybe their careers depend on them staying away from an asset like that? Clearly, there's been a lot of indications in the broader economy that this thing is here to stay in the most generous interpretation of events. I think the way that you and I feel, and probably many others, people listening and watching, it's not only here to stay, it's going to thrive, and it's been thriving. So how's that look for you when you're, you know, in your professional sphere there discussing this thing or talking about ways that you guys can get exposure to it or you have exposure to it? I'm always curious about that. You know, we talk to a lot of people on this program who are 1 foot in TradFi, 1 foot in Bitcoin, whether it's C-suite folks from mining companies or exchanges or whatever. And I'm always, always, always interested in hearing what those conversations look like from the professional side, away from, you know, Bitcoin Twitter and those kind of zealots. Nothing wrong with that, of course, but there's another side to that coin. How is it for you?
Yeah, so there's a couple different groups and conversations that I'll have. And I think to broaden it out at first, I think Bitcoiners, they overestimate how easy it is for TradFi to get Bitcoin. So they might assume that because people in this world were so close to the monetary policy and the investments and stocks and bonds that we just naturally see that Bitcoin, it solves a bunch of our problems. A few people see that, and I would put myself in the category of, I know the system so well up and close. I've done it for so long now that I understand we need a new system because the current one is just totally messed up and it's going to die soon. And we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But you definitely have, you know, a couple different people. You've got the guy that's been there for decades and he's benefited from TradFi and from bull markets and stocks and bonds for decades. So he or she has got a huge net worth. You know, they've been paid by their investment companies. Their personal investments have gone up like crazy and they don't see anything wrong with the current system, the way it's structured. And they would never think that anything, let alone Bitcoin, but anything could replace what they've been used to. So you definitely get people like that, that just immediately shut it out. I think you also get people that are generally in that same mindset. They have a little bit more of an open mind, but they really get stuck on the volatility of it and the fact that it seems like it's this risk on asset all the time. And it's really hard for them to zoom out and understand that we're new. You know, this is a little bit over 10 years old, and you got to think back to how many years did it take for gold to be monetized as the number one money in the world. You know, it took a while. You'll probably find guys that don't actually even believe in gold and don't believe the sound money use case. So you definitely have that. And then I think your third, and this is probably the one that just kind of gets me the most, is you have the crypto bros that are a little bit younger and they're just in it for the gains. And they want to buy and sell and trade and be this expert. And it's all about the short term. And you talk to them about Bitcoin and they sort of say, you know what, that's old news. I'm all about the use cases for crypto, and store value has a minimal use case. And so that's that third group. You try to get through to them and say, no, actually, store value's got a great, great use case. And all of these other coins, I mean, they're dinos, they're decentralized in name only. And, you know, the comeback is always that, oh, the technology, it's not there yet. It's going to be proven one day, but we're still building towards it. And yeah, so out of the three, I'd say that one's the most frustrating. Definitely the boomers that would never consider it are annoying as well, because you can't get through anything to them. That middle group that kind of understands there's a problem, like that's the group you can get through to. But I would also say that group, they have too much confidence in the Fed still. They have too much confidence in the institutions, and they think that, you know, they're the ones that say the Fed was irresponsible, but I think they can get out of it. And now they might in 2022 be saying, oh, wow, the Fed might have really done it this time. They can't get out of it. And then that's like the sweet spot for converting them into thinking that Bitcoin might be what we need. But yeah, there's a lot of people in that middle group that just aren't there yet. And they're always throwing the negatives back at you for why they aren't.
So what's the mechanism in your view, given that you're the SME here on the call, you know, what is the mechanism for that vulnerable group to bring them in? You and I have spoken before on Spaces and in DMs about, you know, the position that some equities bulls take in miners instead of in Bitcoin, for example, because they don't like the underlying, or maybe, as you mentioned, it's difficult for them to get it for some other reason. Then I think, you know, it's difficult for some funds to probably buy Bitcoin directly for God only knows what regulatory hurdles that would get in the way there. But I'm sure there's many. So what is the bridge? Because I think you're right. I think there's a lot of people who are, you know, a little older than me, probably 45, 55, who are looking at their bond positions, which, by the way, you know, your fixed income position has been growing probably since the time you turned 50, maybe a little before that, as you prepare to ride off into the sunset for 30 or 40 years of retirement and, you know, sandy beaches, hopefully, knock on wood. And you're watching that value dwindle. So what's the mechanism now? This is the same sort of population that has never downloaded a song, can't run an antivirus program, gets hit by email phishing scams, like the list goes on. How do you get those people over? What do you think?
So first of all, the current monetary regime is doing a lot of that for us, because we know it's nuts. The endless printing, the modern monetary policy, complete joke. And I think my biggest, what I thought was the craziest, the crossing the Rubicon moment, was when the Fed directly said, and they went out and bought investment grade and high yield bonds in the US market. Because when I saw that, that was basically saying that no company can go bankrupt. Like, yeah, the ones that already had, you know, 5 cent equity prices and bonds in the tens and 20s or single digits, like that kind of stuff, fine. But anybody else besides that, that was basically guaranteeing the entire market, which we've just never seen before. So I think that, at least in my space, that was some light bulbs went off and said, wait, maybe we should have something else here besides. But I think my key is, I really want to hammer home the kind of two things, which is one, they kind of have to get sound money in gold first. Because I didn't even get that for a while. I mean, I majored in economics and finance, and I didn't really even hear the gold standard, I think, once in my 4 years of college. I mean, it's that the fiat education is just that fiat. It's really bad. So it took me a little bit of time to understand that first. So just getting these guys to understand sound money, which, again, it's becoming easier because we're seeing that inflation 7, 8, 9, 10% as reported. So it's probably 15, 20%, right? So that's good. And then I think the second is trying to get them to zoom out and say that, and kind of trying to communicate that this is it's a very new asset. The volatility we're seeing is very short term. It's already a lot less volatile than it used to be. Mm-hmm. So you really can't use volatility as an excuse, because this is like a super early, you know, high growth tech stock, early 1990s internet. And, you know, you're really going to be kind of sitting here saying you're going to miss out on this fully because it was a little too volatile for your tastes. So I think I use those two points. And, you know, to some people, it does make sense. I mean, I don't think these people are jumping in 50% of their assets at first. I mean, it'll take some time to do that. But I think, you know, a 5% allocation, kind of like Paul Tudor Jones, I think it's reasonable for these guys that are sort of like, yeah, it's the faster horse of sound money. Rather than doing gold, I do more Bitcoin. And then I think, as we both know, once you have 5% Bitcoin, it's not going to stay at 5% because you're either going to understand it better and buy a lot more, or it's going to go up over time. So yeah, so that's starting with those two points, I think, are the most important that I found.
There's another sweet spot that I want to talk about, and you may be best suited of all the guests we've had, SB, to discuss it. You're a 2010 something graduate, I understand. So, you know, you have peers, colleagues who are around your age, a little younger than me, but not quite young enough to worry about, you know, their weekly paychecks, for example. They're living comfortably somewhere in, you know, the United States. I mean, maybe comfortably anyway. Maybe they're living in like a $5,000 a month studio apartment the size of this room without a bathroom. Who knows? But that aside, you know, I see a lot of overlap between the crypto bro you mentioned earlier and that cohort of recent grad, alleged expert, you know, sort of self-confident, self-proclaimed savant of investing and you know, the crypto sphere. What are these guys missing, you think? You mentioned a little bit before this, you know, I'm all about the use cases. That's obviously bullshit. And I think they think it's bullshit too. The gains is one thing. But ultimately, you know, I think the gains are yet to be seen in Bitcoin. Even if you just got in, I think you have some gains on deck as well. You know, what are they missing that you would say to them? And maybe in their language, you know, you can speak their language better than most. So what's the bridge there that we can help them cross?
Yeah, it's short-term thinking. It's short-term thinking combined with they just want to find that next big thing. And a lot of this stuff does sound cool. I do think some people actually do believe in the use case, as crazy as that sounds. Maybe they haven't been through a cycle of ICOs and they actually believe in, you know, the gaming or something like that. So yeah, I think that's part of it. I think you just have to get through to these guys that the current monetary paradigm that we're living in, it's not normal and it doesn't feel normal and it shouldn't anyway. So I think we have an advantage because it doesn't feel normal, which is good. And we can very easily point to inflation stats now, which you can't. We talked about this in the pod a lot. Like there's no level of propaganda from the media and the politicians that can excuse away inflation. No, inflation, if you fill your gas tank and it's 50% more than it used to be, you know, that happened. So we can blame anybody we want, but we know that happened and we know groceries are 25% more. So we have that going for us. And I think you just need to communicate to these guys that when it's all said and done and when kind of the tide comes back in ashore, it's sort of like, do you want this extremely pro-risk shitcoin that, you know, might work but probably won't? Like, do you want your money tied up in that, or do you want your money on something that is trying to be the next monetary standard? Or I mean, it doesn't have it doesn't have a brain itself, but Bitcoin can become that and other ones can't. So yeah. And look, you're not going to get through to everybody. I think the classic is that you learn, ideally you can learn from other people's mistakes, but you're always going to learn from your own mistakes more. You know, they're going to get rug pulled. They're going to have some shit coins in the portfolio that decline. I mean, look, it happened to me a bunch of years ago. I thought I was going to make it big in some shit coins and I didn't, although I checked, there's a few of them that I checked, in mid 21 after 4 years of not checking them, and a couple of them were up. But for the most part they weren't, and people have to learn. And unfortunately, you're just not going to get everybody. Because look, if Bitcoin was so easy to get in the first place, it would be, you know, $1 million at least a coin, probably 10 million, and it would have global adoption. It doesn't, and so we just got to make do with it.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned looking back at old altcoins. Like, I know I look back at a few that I dabbled in that are, like you mentioned, like way up from where I sold them. But you know what's never up from where I left them is my ex-girlfriend. So if I'm ever down, I just go there. And those are all in the red since I dropped that bag. So I'm not too worried about that. Your co-host, colleague, conciliaire, TB, who I invited to the show late. Sorry, TB, when you listen to this. I should have invited you earlier, but I didn't know what kind of arrangement I was going to have here on the show.
No, he may be good to go in. So
I hope hey, if he's ready, I got the green room open. So I want to know, you know, how did you bridge the gap with him? Judging by the commentary and conversations you guys have had, which I recommend people who are listening and watching check out. Your podcast has been great. I listen to it every week, twice a week now. If you guys continue that pace, it seems to me you invested significantly earlier. I think you're a 2017 vintage, maybe a 2018 vintage. What vintage is he, and how did you bridge that gap with him? Because he seems like a bright guy, and he works in tech, and so he was late. How did that happen? How did you get to him with the orange with the corn talk?
Yeah. So first, he's good to join. So pop the link into the woke DM, and he'll pop
oh
in.
Oh boy, here we go.
Yeah. So to answer the question, this was actually incredible. So I'll go back to where I kind of got it from. So I'd heard about it in college years ago, early 2010s, and didn't think that much of it. It was low, 200, something like that, whatever. But I had a college professor that he was like, this is the next big thing. Like you guys gotta get some, at least by a little bit. But we're in college, right? It's we got other uses for the money.
You're buying PBRs.
didn't think much of it. And then I think it was Zero Hedge. So I don't read Zero Hedge as religiously as I used to, but whether it was a different job I was at, or I had more downtime at the job or something. Oh, here he is.
What's up, guys?
That's TV's music.
What's going on?
Great to see you. SB is giving us the rundown of how he orange-pilled you, since you're a latecomer to not only this show, but the big show as well.
I thought I heard that. I mean, what a journey that was. I was overhearing SB's story about all like these shit coins he was investing in. I mean, I was even worse than him. I'm looking back at my like Bittrex, Poloniex, like all those sketchy crypto exchanges, and it like physically pains me to see the amount of Bitcoin that I like exchanged for these shit coins that I've lost value now. Like if I had kept that Bitcoin, man, I'd be sitting pretty right now.
Well, the story of I was about to get into the story of there's a summer night in 2017. So I forget exactly how you had gotten into the crypto scene, but I had gotten into it. I was reading Zero Hedge at the job that I had, and I think it was something like, there's some story about capital controls and people getting capital out of China, and maybe Zero Hedge in early 2017 had a headline about Bitcoin hits 1,000 for the first time, or the first time in years, something like that. And then I was like, you know what, this Bitcoin thing, I'm hearing a lot about this. I heard about it on Zero Hedge and reading it. I had heard about it in college several years prior. So maybe I should check this out. And at the same time that I was having those thoughts, TV, you were having those same thoughts. And there was one night where you came over and we just both like were excited to share the news with each other that we found out about this, and we bought the same time. We both said, "Yeah, we're doing this." So yeah, we had our dalliances with the shit coins, but eventually we got ourselves straight.
Yeah, I the way I got into it was back in 2017. I was living with a couple of guys I went to school with, and one of them was really into crypto early on. He actually like works for a blockchain company, which is interesting, but him and his buddies were buying Ethereum. So he was telling me about it. He's like, you got to buy this. This is like going to be huge. And it was like $150 at the time. It might even been less than that. So I'll never forget like just buying a bunch of Ethereum, not even knowing what the hell this was. And like literally the next day, just like rocket. I'm like, damn, this is free money. And so I started buying a lot of Ethereum, started doing the altcoins. Yeah, then like, yeah, that night I was over at SB's apartment and I was like, yeah, have you ever heard about crypto? And he's like, yep. So yeah, over the years, like I was hesitant to buy Bitcoin because of like how expensive it was. Cause I was like, $1,000 I could get this many coins of Ethereum or another coin versus like a fraction of Bitcoin. So like that principle, I couldn't wrap my head around, but SB kept like telling me, you got to do it. Just trust me. This is the winner. And then finally, I just did some more research. I was like, Bitcoin, like it's not going anywhere. This is the gold standard. The other ones, everyone's just trying to chase a high. They're trying to find like the next big, like get rich quick scheme. But, Bitcoin is like the ultimate store of value. So like once I finally understood that, and more specifically understood like the limited supply cap, and thinking like there's billions of people out there in the world and there's only 21 million of them. Like once I fully grasped that, I was like, okay, I'm going all in on Bitcoin.
Did you really go all in? I know you guys, okay. So two questions, right? One, we'll talk about in a bit. Did you really go all in? What's all in mean? That's one piece. But the other thing I want to ask you guys, cause we got this question on our 1 year show from, I think Jordan asked the question, friend of the show, longtime listener, first time caller. And he was, asking us when we say, this is not financial advice, do your own research. What do we mean? And so you guys obviously did a bunch of research into Bitcoin. You got SB, he's reading Zero Hedge. Okay. He's at home, he's prepping, he's got canned goods, ammunition, reading Zero Hedge. What research are you doing, TB, to find out that SB is correct about the Bitcoin thing when you were on, you know, unit bias Ethereum, unit bias, you know, X token on Poloniex? By the way, I've never opened the Poloniex website. I know about it in name only. I've never been to Poloniex. I don't think anyone after like the last 2 years has been to Poloniex, I'm pretty sure. So I'm curious, what did you look at? What brought you over finally to Bitcoin?
Yeah. So SB is definitely more of like the financial expert between the two of us. Like, I'm not even going to pretend that I know even remotely near the level that he does. But what I did is I just started just reading a lot of articles about Bitcoin, just in terms of like, how does this actually work? Like, what is cryptocurrency? What is blockchain? How does Bitcoin fit into this picture? Why does everyone want it? And then also just me personally working in the tech space, a lot of people are just like naturally gravitate towards cryptocurrency. And I was seeing a lot of like our executives at the tech companies that I've been working at, a lot of them were buying a lot of Bitcoin. They started moving a lot of their investment decisions into increasing the percentage of Bitcoin that they were doing. And they all kept talking about like, they were all like talking about their like Bitcoin exit strategy. So they're looking for like a specific target price that they would all get out. So like, clearly indicating they have a good amount of it. So I thought, you know, these are very educated people. Like, these guys are Harvard, MIT educated engineers, people who know a lot about technology, and they were all getting into Bitcoin. So kind of seeing that kind of that marriage, like the fusion of like my professional life and then also talking to SB from a financial perspective and having his vote of confidence, it just made me feel more comfortable with it. And then like, as your, to your question, like, what does all in mean? Well, you know, this might be risky on my part, but you know, right now, like the stock market, I'm getting absolutely killed on. So like, I'm still doing like my, you know, normal 401k and like the S&P 500 index fund investments. But in terms of individual stocks, I'm done. Like, I'm not doing that anymore. Like, any like disposable income I have is going directly into Bitcoin. So, that's kind of what I mean by that.
So I guess before SB, I want to hear what you think about this too. Not the question I pinned. That's just a funny comment about Bob's and Vagin. But the question I have for you guys both is, you know, what sort of percentage? Just kind of, it kind of maybe is a little personal, but I'm curious. I think about my own sort of weekly investment decisions, and I'm about double or more per week in Bitcoin what I am in my traditional vehicle. So in Canada, we don't have the 401k. We have the RRSP and the TFSA, both 100% tax efficient, as long as you don't break any rules when you withdraw, one at your retirement age, 60 or 63, I think. And then the other, as long as you don't put in more than 10 or 12,000 a year, it's all tax-free, gains included. So I know for me, I'm double or more Bitcoin now weekly. And that number goes up on days like today when the price is down 5 or 6%. So what is it for you guys? Are you guys double? Are you triple? Are you, where do you sit there?
Well, we've talked about it on the pod that we're, yeah, both of us really are not beyond the 401k stuff, beyond the matches and whatnot. Yeah, we're really not putting that much money, if anything, into stocks at this point. So it is definitely weighed towards Bitcoin for sure. And yeah, I mean, TB, you've gone more all in than me recently.
Yeah. Hopefully this is not oversharing, but
If you have to preface it with that, then chances yeah. are, you know.
This is live, so just yeah. keep in mind, TV.
Look, if you listen to the podcast, you know I shoot from the hip. I've been very fortunate to work at very early stage startups that had successful exits. So recently, I've been able to get the payouts from that, and I've put a hefty sum of that into Bitcoin.
There's nothing like putting life-changing money right into Bitcoin and just watching yeah. thing absolutely crash the first day that you invest. There's no you know, better rule of thumb and no better way to baptize yourself by fire than to put in, you know, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, whatever it is, the first time you buy, and watch the thing immediately tank 10%. Because chances are, if you just knew about it and decided it was time to put in, a bunch of other people decided it was time to pull out that same moment. That's the case all the time. Miami conference, great example. I know you guys talked about this on your show, that we get the Miami pump, but we got the opposite today. So let's dive into territory which I view as a little dicey. Len is not here, so we'll venture into this territory. Maybe I'll like chop up the audio, but you guys have both mentioned your educational background on your show, and you've talked about a little bit here tonight and how it's, in your view and mine as well, it's failing these days, and may have been failing when we were in school, but certainly is failing now. What in your view, and either one of you can take this first, in your view, where do we start solving this problem? Because it seems to me that post-secondary education is really a linchpin for successful societies, and we've completely let the thing disintegrate to, you know, a fine dust over the last 20 or 30 years. So where do we start fixing this?
Well, I can start with this one because it does delve into a little bit of what you asked previously, which is, if I continue on my Bitcoin journey and it's, you know, it's reading Zero Hedge and talking with TV and buying into it, you know, starting in 2017. But when did I really get Bitcoin? I didn't totally fully get it in 2017. There was I think it was an early 2018 podcast with Safedean, and I think it was Chris DeRose. I think his show might be Bitcoin Uncensored. I haven't listened to it in a while, but it wasn't even mostly about Bitcoin. It might have been a debate on what is sound money, or can Bitcoin be sound money? I'll have to get the exact link if it's still up, because in the video, Safedean just totally crushes DeRose, who was arguing that gold was not sound money. And Safedean was saying, look, if we go back through history, every single fiat currency has failed. There's never been a fiat currency that has emerged that was never backed by a hard money or sound money to begin with. And so for me, like, then I started racking my brain going, that makes complete sense, because why are we in this environment right now where we have this US dollar backed by nothing? Like, this is actually crazy. What's going on? And we have this inflation that, obviously, anyone with half of a brain can understand that inflation compounded over decades is terrible. I mean, everyone knows that. So then I think back to when I read the Bitcoin Standard, and that just crystallizes it. And I had a good perspective on that because I did study economics and finance in college. I go, why did I learn more in the Bitcoin Standard about economics and finance than I did during my entire college degree? I mean, that makes no sense. So there's an issue of what is being taught, and, you know, these fiat academics who Safe talks about this a lot, but I think it's pretty much everywhere, where it is less so about teaching, but it's a lot more about research and grants, and it's kind of just keeping the money flowing. Another thing that I ran into in college was the incredible growth of the administrative state. So you know, like I was trying to get events put on for the clubs I was in. I had to talk to like six different people in to get something put on. It was like unbelievable. Like I wrote, you know, like I had to write about this to the school and just say, like, this is absurd. I can't believe this. So it was just an antiquated system. So I think maybe a broad question, a broad answer before I give the mic to TB is that, it's we're not focused on outcomes of education anymore. We're focused on keeping the gravy train rolling. And whether that is fiat economists and professors in the college, or whether that's the college administrative group that just wants to keep on growing the number of employees in their organizations, they can keep on getting more and more money. So I think that's like a very broad issue, is that the incentives are aligned to kind of get everyone staying in motion and suckling on the educational, you know, money teat, rather than actually educating kids for the future.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, SB. I think it's kind of like a twofold problem. A lot of universities and colleges in America, at least, they provide a liberal arts education, and it's just all very like generic type of stuff. So for me specifically, I was poli sci and communication, so I was taking philosophy classes that literally have no application to anything that I do today. I was taking classes on victimology and forensic sciences as my electives just because it was easy credits. and you're realizing these colleges, they're charging you an arm and a leg for the amount of credits, and the quality you're getting in return for those credits is has no implication or no value to your ultimate earning power once you graduate. They just want to collect those checks, as SB said. So that's a huge problem. And then secondly, there's definitely a culture in America where everyone feels entitled to go to college.
Yes.
So these private loan companies, as well as the federal government, they're benefiting greatly from people who are, you know, just basically being suckers and saying, you know, I need to go to college, and I don't care if it's going to cost me $70,000 to $80,000 a year. I'm gonna do it. So they take out these high interest loans, and when that money could have been better spent if they went into trade school, if they pursued a vocation, if they started their own business, or even hell, if they even invested that money, I'd bet a lot of them would make a higher yield or a higher return than they would pursuing some generic liberal arts degree that they got and God knows what. So I think it's just a huge problem. It's out of control. We really need to shift that dynamic because it's pretty predatory right now. You have these kids who are basically taking on a contract, signing up for something that they don't fully understand how this works. They don't really quite understand what money is and that they have to pay this back. So it's really becoming a bubble, and I don't really know what the right answer is. I don't think total loan forgiveness is the right call. Like, I think that actually would be a horrible decision, but we really need to crack down the college system because it's gone too far now.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because Len, though he's under the weather, is in the chat guiding the interview as per usual. He's asking, and I, to be honest, I'm curious about this as well. You guys are in the thick of it in America. You're in midterms where political favors are being doled out like Monopoly money from the Fed. And one thing that keeps coming up is student loan forgiveness. So I'll preface this with, you know, we discuss this on our show quite a bit, that an under-discussed indicator of economic strength is whether or not students are at the moment paying their debts to their student years. And right now, I believe they're not. I think it was kicked back again in February and is probably on schedule again to be looked at in either March or April. So it wasn't March. I'm guessing it's either April or May. So you know, all this talk about Biden successfully sort of re-energizing the economy as midterms come around, students are still not paying their loans back. That tells me something about whether or not there is growth in the demographics that really need that growth the most. What is the thought from the Woke Antidote podcast crowd, you know, the two hosts who are with me here tonight, of course, but also you guys are, you know, friends with people, presumably, who have student loans still. Maybe you two have student loans still. You're mentioning some of these numbers. You know, this is more than, you know, you guys pay more in 1 year, I think, in the States than I paid in 4 in Canada. And I have a poli-sci degree as well, TB. So what is the thought over there about cancellation of student loan debt? And what do you guys think about it?
Yeah, like I said before, I think that'd be one of the worst things that our government could do for a couple of reasons. Obviously, you have the financial economic impact of it. I mean, money just doesn't grow on trees. We've already spent trillions of dollars over the past couple of years. It actually scares me to think about, you know, how we're going to pay that in the future and what the ramifications of that are. But also, secondly, it just really breeds a culture of laziness and entitlement. Like, to your point, the school that SB and I went to, at the time it was, you know, upper 50s, almost 60K a year. I actually checked now, it's now over 80K a year. That's how much it's gone up in, what, the 8 years that we graduated ago. So it's just out of control. I think, like, when I graduated from college, like, I make conscious decisions to not get a super nice apartment. I actually went back to my parents and lived at home with them. Did not go out spending money like crazy. I actually was obsessed with getting rid of my debt, you know, because I was like, I didn't want all this debt carrying over for me for years. I wanted it done. I wanted to pay it back. I wanted to complete my end of the bargain. And I think for a lot of people who've made those conscious decisions, you're really penalizing them for doing what ultimately is better for the economy. So you're rewarding the wrong types of behavior. And And I think what you're observing now is very right. Like, a lot of people feel like the government's going to cancel debt or something's going to happen, so they feel less motivation to pay it back. I have a lot of friends right now who still owe debt, and they're like, I'm just going to pay the minimums because I know something's going to happen. The government's going to come and wipe this for me. And it really pisses me off, because it like just makes people like me feel like a sucker. Like, why did we do the right thing? Why did we pay back our loans? And now people are kind of just milking off the government and expecting people to pay their way forward when, you know, they agreed to take on that debt to begin with. So I think it'd just be a horrible thing for our country if they went down that route.
Well, TB, I think you perfectly describe why the government wants to keep extending it, because I view it as stealth UBI, where they're looking at this and saying, we need to get the economy going any way possible. And you just described what you did when you had a lot more student loans than you have now. You were more cautious and you weren't spending as much. Well, what is this Keynesian MMT economy being driven by these lunatic economists? What did they want the most? They want spending. So they're giving out, they're essentially printing money to people who have student loans because they're not paying them. And yeah, there's a lot of people out there, I totally agree with you, TB, that they're throwing this off to the future. They don't care because they think something's going to be done about it. And the other thing I think is so fascinating is we're living in this world of extremely low interest rates. Well, at least we were. It's changed a little bit recently. But the way that they were calculating student loans, there were pretty significant interest rates. Like, we're talking, I don't remember exactly, but like I think there's people out there with 6, 7, 8, 9% rates on student loans. So you know how much interest that is if you're going to pay that off in 20, 30 years when you start when you're 22? I mean, that's just insane. So yeah, and it's tough because, you know, TB, on one hand, I totally feel how you feel that being responsible is the right call. And it's really unfortunate when you're not being rewarded for that. And look, I think the everyday person in general is not being rewarded for being fiscally responsible because they're getting inflation, because now their 401ks are crashing down because of the Fed. So, you know, this is happening in general. But the problem with the student loan issue is that, you know, and we talked about it before, they were preyed upon as young kids, as kids of 17, by the system. So, you know, in one sense, you do say they really should be paying these back. But in another sense, you sort of also go, they were lied to. There was propaganda. We could even take it to fiat media and how they promote everyone has the right to go to college and party and not really care and not have to study something that is going to be useful for the future. I mean, that's an attitude that media and movies put in you, you know, when you're a young teenager up until you go to college, at least. So it's just hard to fault them 100% for it. But I think certainly it would be extremely unfair to the people that were responsible for people to just, you know, for it to disappear. So yeah, I don't know the right answer, but in my case, I just think it's the government wanting to promote more spending.
I think you guys are right. I think that there's a mindset that goes with sort of, you know, personal responsibility, personal development, personal growth, and long-term thinking that is being disincentivized by low interest, by this idea that your loan's going to be forgiven, et cetera, et cetera. People go to college and pay, you know, to your point, $80,000 a year. And if it's anything like when I went, you know, half the people there are just looking for classes that they don't have to take on a Friday so they can go party on Thursday night at the campus pub. That's one way to go through school. It should tell you something about the quality of education you're getting, if that's even an available avenue for you. But, you know, that's a conversation for another time. I don't get Americans on the show all the time. Len and I typically talk to Canadian guys, you know, in the crypto space, unfortunately, sometimes miners or whatnot, but Bitcoin as well, of course. With two Americans here, you know, I want to go down this road of, you know, about this sort of American collapse, this empire in decline that you guys talk about sometimes on your show. And I think about quite a bit, you know, as your neighbor to the north, we've basically been able to skate on all military and defense spending and basically every economic policy that would otherwise drive economic growth. We just rely on you guys to see what you'll do. And for the first time, I think in the last 100 years, we're really seeing now, not only in America that is no longer capable of protecting us economically, militarily, perhaps even, but also seems to have no interest in rebounding. Like you guys mentioned, there's a sort of a growing cohort of people who think they're entitled to things like college education, free debt, free money, this cancerous, deleterious consumerism that's like rampant in the United States. Along with, as you guys of course know, this sort of woke culture that's destroying, I think, a lot of institutions that have been pillars of American exceptionalism for the last, you know, at least since the 70s, probably longer if you want to go back to World War II or World War I, that's fine as well. What do you guys think about this sort of decline? And is this something that the rest of the world should be concerned with? Is it something that you're concerned with? What are you thinking about this?
All right.
Very polite. Usually the Canadian on the show is the polite guy, right? You guys, you know, if I'm paying attention, should we be talking over each other, et cetera? That's what I see on TV about Americans. So
yeah, that's right. I mean, that's definitely a really astute observation about what's going on in America right now. It saddens me to hear that people from the outside can see it too, because SB and I definitely have, and it really pains us to see what's been happening to our country over just like the last 10 years. Like, this has been a very rapid decline. It hasn't been, it hasn't been like a slow, gradual decrease. It just seems like it's coming in fell swoops now, at least from my perspective. I hate to sound like an arrogant American here, maybe where I'm just biased, but in my opinion, I just feel like the world is in a safer, better place when there's a strong America. This country has brought about a lot of good in the world. And when you have a strong American military, as you mentioned, and a strong American economy, their allies tend to do quite well as well. And we like that type of world that we live in. And nowadays, I think Americans, they've had such a nice run. They've had it so good, and they've forgotten what it feels like to have challenges, that they are now inventing problems to be upset about. It's kind of almost like a distraction, or there's kind of like a culture of victimization, that if you are if you are anyway victimized, then you become part of a special group where it's almost like an honor to be a victim, where people place a certain level of like social clout on that. And, you know, we talk about this all the time on the podcast, but it's really this culture of wokeness that is really decaying the country. We're really dividing each other, becoming enemies. So when the house is really falling apart from within, then you're seeing everything on the outside starting to crumble as well. And I really don't know where we go from here. Frankly, in my opinion, I think SB would agree with me here. I don't really think America does recover from this, sadly. I think like we're going to move into a new world where America is going to fall down the ladder. You know, we'll still be a first world country, but we're not going to be the mighty country that we've known and loved over our lifetime, and, you know, for decades before that. It's really sad to see, because this could have all been avoidable, but it seems like there's almost like a deeper underlying motivation or some movement to kind of bring us down. And I don't quite understand why that is, but we're moving at that pace at a very accelerated level.
Yeah, I could not agree more, especially with that last part. And what I try to do, importantly, when I'm in these spaces with you guys is I always try to separate the American people from the American elite that are running the institutions and the foreign policy, because that kind of stuff, I think, is just a total disaster. And the people running the country, I mean, they sold out the country. There's nothing left to say about it. If you look at what they did in the, you know, kind of 90s and early 2000s by moving everything to China, and that was supposed to be great for the country because we'd get lower prices, I guess. But how many jobs did that shift away? I mean, it's incredible that now 20 years later, Biden's the same guy that was so pro shipping all these jobs away to China and the manufacturing, and now it's Build American. I mean, give me a break about that. So, you know, that's just one example. There's countless examples of how, you know, I think there's a quote unquote elite in the country, and I call them the parasitic elite, where they view America as basically like a trading zone. They view it as an economic property to be taken advantage of, and they are not they don't have nationalism for the US. They don't really believe in the country. They don't believe in the values we have of free speech and open debate. And they just, they don't really care about the decline unless it directly impacts them. And the richer you are, it's not impacting you. So for a lot of these people, it doesn't impact them. Now, what does that mean for the psyche of the country, as I think you kind of wanted to get to, I think, is that, yeah, it's not great out there. Because there's a lot of, we talk about this in the pod. If you go to any city, it's a complete disaster. I mean, it's drugs all over the place. It's homeless. It's crime. So that's happening in all these cities, and that's creeping out to the suburbs too. But in general, like, I don't really think a lot of Americans, and this happens for a lot of first world people, but like, I don't think they're happy. I mean, they're kind of seeing what's going on. The media is not positive media. They feel alone. They don't have friends. They don't have connections like they used to. And I think a lot of that stems from just the people at the top setting a really bad tone and not viewing America as that great place that, with the home of the land and the free of the brave. I mean, that's just not what it is right now. So I think the collapse is happening. Like TB said, it's accelerating. And the question for people is if, because some people don't know what's happening. They're stuck in La La Land. But I think increasingly they're going back and forth and wondering, why do I have to listen and subscribe to this news that changes every 8 hours? I mean, that's kind of what we're at right now. So there's so much whiplash, which is why we do our hashtag woke whiplash. But then I think the people that do realize it, you can either be sad about it, or you can say, like, I think what TB and I do is we understand what's happening. We laugh about it. We try to prepare mentally, physically, and financially with Bitcoin. And we're hoping that this doesn't last that long and we can go into a much greater situation in 3, 5, 10 plus years, however long it's going to be. But yeah, you got to have a good mental head on you, or you might not make it through this time frame.
I think that's probably true. It's important to kind of steel yourself both in your social circle and in your personal life. You mentioned physical, mental, financial, preparations. You're correct about that, I think. And so you mentioned Bitcoin there. This is a Bitcoin show. And so I have to ask, you guys are, again, pretty well suited to tackle this question from two important angles. What's next for Bitcoin next 2-3 years? We've seen already a huge spike in price since March 2020. I will note that while many TradFi fiat disciples have been quick to point out that Bitcoin hasn't risen with the same sort of speed and power that it did in 2020 since the inflation numbers came out or started to come out and become part of the mainstream ether in the last 6 months, I'll point out to those people that many Bitcoiners knew that inflation was going to come back in March 2020 and bought like rabid dogs on those COVID lows and have seen the gains because we were able to predict that inflation was going to be a problem in most of the modern world. And here we are now. So we've seen those gains from inflation. I think if you put a dollar into Bitcoin in the last year or 2 years, you've been very happy with where it's been compared to the prices of everyday goods and the much, much maligned CPI basket, both here and over in the States where you guys are. But what comes next? What's on deck for Bitcoin? What's on deck as it relates to its sort of narrative as a store of value, inflation hedge? What do you guys think?
Well, TB, it's funny because we were talking about this the last pod that, yeah, you cannot look at Bitcoin performing as an inflation hedge over the past month. You have to look at it from the COVID lows. So yeah, totally agree with that. Yeah, look, I think the store value use case is going to continue to be proven because like we were talking earlier in the pod, even people that have been in the game for a while in terms of looking at this monetary policy, they understand that it's out of control and we might need a new system. And that's only the people in the US and certainly, a lot of the US demand is going to drive the price to a certain extent. So for example, one bullish avenue would be if ETF's approved and it gets to the people's 401ks, then that's a huge kind of money that goes in there. I think retirees putting that 3 to 5 Paul Tudor Jones percentage in their accounts could be huge. But more than that, the opportunity in the US is and Canada is for people like us who see this and want to prepare financially and want to benefit. But the opportunity really is across the world, I think, where this current monetary regime, it's going to die. It's inevitable. It's going to die. If we didn't realize that before the Russia-Ukraine crisis, we do realize that now. And it probably officially died after when we banned Russia from everything. So it's inevitably going to come to a close, and other countries around the world are going to have to realize that they're going to move to something new. And it probably would make sense to back themselves at least a little bit with Bitcoin. I think my one of my potential bigger concerns, and I don't know how this gets resolved, but I do see China being kind of the next leader. And I don't think that's really an out of left field thought. Because I think if you look at where they do their trade routes, and they, you know, everyone's seen that graphic where China has overtaken the US as the biggest trading partner for all of these various countries over the past 20 years. I mean, basically the US policy was if we don't agree with you on a political basis, we go in, do a coup or assassinate one of your leaders and then install somebody that we like, and then we'll build a bunch of military bases in the country. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically what the US policy is. China is basically, we want to sell you good products at a great price, and we want to buy some from you. I mean, and it's just, if you're a country, what do you want to do? Do you want the US model, or do you want China that's not meddling in your internal affairs? And so I think they have a really good system set up. The problem is, are they going to embrace Bitcoin in the world stage or not? And if they don't, then is that not great that you have the top country in the world, if it were China, kind of, you know, being very anti-Bitcoin? So that would be a worry of mine. Not that that would kill the bull case or anything, but that's something I don't love. Although on the flip side to that, you could also say, well, if that is the case, and the US and China are going to have this adversarial relationship for a while, because China is the one trying to usurp the US and the US doesn't want it, then does the US embrace Bitcoin as a way to fight China? You know, so that's where that game theory falls into place. And then, hey, if China's, you know, great with Russia, and Russia's all about Bitcoin now because they have the energy capacity to do it and they want to get paid in it, then how does that work? So, yeah, so that's, I think that the geopolitical possibilities, that's what gets me the most jazzed up on it. And generally, very positive. I mean, obviously, LATAM, you have El Salvador. I think plenty of other LATAM countries understand the destruction that this USD, you know, policy has wrought on them. And so I think that can be, you know, completely an embrace from that part of the world. So yeah, I think that's where my eye is focused over the next few years.
Yeah, that was really well put, SB. Like, that's why I like really enjoyed doing the show with you, because your financial background brings a really good perspective that, you know, a lot more about that stuff than I do. From me, like, I think like we're seeing a ton of innovation. I've talked about this on the show before, but we're really seeing like a huge increase in the amount of innovation in this space. So like domestically in Austin, Texas, and then in Miami, Florida, we're seeing, you know, those are really becoming these like booming cities for crypto and like Bitcoin specifically. They're really making it really easy for companies to move over there, to start up their business. They're getting some really nice tax breaks for doing so. They're really investing in type and making Bitcoin mining a lot more energy efficient. We're seeing a lot of talent getting flooded into these cities. I think like Miami is going to become the East Coast of, you know, the Silicon Valley. Like that's how many companies are moving there right now. So it's really fascinating to see. And then like, just as an average person, like when you watch TV, when you watch sports, like when I watch like F1, I see a crypto.com ads all over the racetrack. When we were watching the Super Bowl, it was like basically like they call it the Crypto Bowl. Like every commercial was about crypto. Like this is not going anywhere. I think like in America right now, according to like Coinbase studies, Only like a mere fraction of Americans, I think it's like 10% of Americans, actually own any form of cryptocurrency. But I think over the next 2-3 years, we're going to see that number increase. So like with that, obviously the price of Bitcoin will rise, but we really are like in the stage of like moving from a stage of awareness to now up-leveling that. Now we're going to be moving into a stage of innovation, and we're going to see a lot of like really cool technologies that are going to be byproducts of this. Like I know like in the healthcare space, they're really thinking about how to leverage blockchain, and even like real estate is starting to fall into this. So there's going to be like, this is really like the early internet age. Like that's how I look at it. And if you're just like a normal consumer, this is such a narrow window in time where if you make, you know, these like very conscious and steady investments into Bitcoin, you could be really helping to generate like generational wealth for yourself. I truly believe that. Like this is such a small window of time, but now's the time to do it. And future you is going to be really happy that you did.
I totally agree. You guys really both hit the nail on the head there. You've been outstanding guests, but you know, as maybe both of you know, at the end of the show, we can't let you go without stirring up a little trouble in your personal lives. So I'm going to just preface this with, I heard your show today. I think you released it last night, maybe, or maybe it was the one you released on Sunday. I forget. But that aside, SB, you're buying protein powder. Do I have that right?
I am. Yes.
Right. Okay. So are you, what are your big five lifts, and, what are you shooting for before swimsuit season? What are you thinking?
Oh, I should have known that was coming up. I think you probably know with the DMs that we're in, I, don't have as much gym experience and dedication as you guys do in the DM. So I can't say that I've got any particular goals except just looking good. I mean, right? That's the at the end of the day, that's what you want to be.
This is true. TB, what about you? Are you a gym rat? You fancy yourself a parishioner at the Iron Temple or no?
I mean, I'll be honest, I was up until COVID, and like I haven't renewed my gym membership since then. Like my fiance and I are looking to buy a house or an apartment. So we're trying to figure that out, and then I'll find a gym near there. But for now, I got myself a Peloton and like some dumbbells at home. So I'll do that. I had to mention the protein powder story because I was like, SB, it's beach season. Are you trying to look good for the ladies out there?
That cracked me up.
Well, and then we found out. So the one that I was grabbing was a 20% inflation. One of our friends, he must have a different brand, legitimately 40% inflation, $100 to $140 the last time he got it.
This is dangerous stuff. The inflation narrative, like you said, is not going away. People are going to be worried about this for a long time to come. So before I give you the handoff to tell you, you know, you can tell people where to find your show, which again, I recommend people listen to. It's a good program. These guys are bright and have banter akin to Len and I's. They've been friends for a long time and it shows. So, you know, boys, since you're both talking about looking good on the beach, let's trade the asphalt for some sand. You guys are lined up, Rocky and Apollo Creed, you know, short shorts, guns out, sun's out. Women at the finish line. Who's winning a 40-yard dash, and by how much?
Wow. I mean, SB, I don't think it'd be close.
I think you got to look back. So TB, you played baseball, right?
Yeah, I played a bunch, but yes.
Yeah, so when I played center and I led off. So I was all about the stolen bases. Now, I can't That's say fair. That I'm still in the stolen base prime, so maybe a little bit would wear off, but I'm still pretty confident.
I guess we'll have to find out when we're at the beach, right?
This is the first. So this first time I've had two people on who are racing each other, and you disagree on the outcome. This is good. I think next year, you know, if things line up, we all make it to Bitcoin Miami. I got a number of foot races. I gotta judge. This year, I think there might be one or two that are going on without me, but next year. I'm going all the way down the list and getting you guys. So before we go, of course, boys, you've been great guests. Tell people where they can find your show, where they can find you guys on Twitter. If you got like an Instagram page where you publish pictures of baked goods, whatever you float your boat or rows your canoe, let people know.
Yeah, on Twitter, we're just at The Woke Antidote. So we're The Woke Antidote Podcast. And I'm trying to bring the memes. I got a retweeted by Zero Hedge Once, which are huge. I bring the memes. So we'll have some fun stuff on you there for even besides the podcast links. We are also on Gab, although we're quickly getting a lot more followers on Twitter than Gab, but we do have a Gab account, The Woke Antidote. And then, I think TB, the Apple podcast, that's been huge for us. So
yeah,
we always tell the listeners, like, check us out in Apple Pods. And then, you know, feel free to write a loving review if you guys enjoy the pod. But yeah, the one other thing, too, we're trying to do a subreddit. So, Joey, you know, like I'll pop into the Bill Simmons subreddit from time to time. And I've told some stories about this to you too, but man, it is the socialists and the communists on that website are incredible. I mean, it is.
What's the name of the subreddit, SB? Okay, I got it here. I'm gonna pull it up. Hold on.
Yeah, so we're trying to establish some episode discussions. So we haven't really done that yet, but yeah, if we got some listeners of this pod that want to pop into the discussion, definitely let us know. But I think that's pretty, I mean, and anywhere else, yep. Yeah, that's pretty covered it.
Yeah, yeah, I will say, like, you are the genius behind our Twitter meme, so if you see any of those, that's likely the work of SB. But just check us out, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star review if you like it. That we really do appreciate that. But yeah, Joey, thanks for having us. I had a blast, and you know, we'd love to have you on our show as well. If we can do a little home and home series.
Hey, man, anytime you guys want. You were great. Thanks everyone for listening, watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Well done there, boys. Way to go.